This is True North Story, the original podcast series. Learn, love, listen, live. With your hosts, Tama Fulton and John Hudson Messerall. Are you ready to discover your True North story?
And wipe the mark of sadness from my face. Show me that your love will never change. If my yesterday is a disgrace, tell me that you still call my name.
South Dakota was the grounds where I grew up and was educated and went on to other boarding schools. Was seldom ever raised at home, but in religious boarding schools where radio and television or movies and whatnot were not permitted. So I had a very limited view of the world, you know, just surrounded by the native children and those who supposedly doing God's work. At my age, I would have definitely felt that they were not. That's my structure. That's the beginning of my foundation.
Did you have many memories of your immediate family members at all, or was it mostly being raised with the religious men and women that you were around?
Well, they took the children, the native children from the parents, and placed them in the boarding school so that they could educate them, and not just educate them as far as regular education as people would think of, but rather to educate them in the ways of the white world. And we were not allowed to speak our language. I don't know if I ever spoke Lakota at all at the age of 4. That's where my life began in the schools. But also not to permitted to practice any spiritual beliefs, which at the age of 4, I don't think I had any. But, you know, basically they were trying to whitewash the native children so that we could become part of the society that they lived in. Some of the boarding schools were Catholic, others were Protestant. Their goal back then was the same. So I grew up with somewhat of an attitude that I had to learn to overcome. It was basically having learned survival skills in order to get along in the world. You had to learn them and learn them fast, not just surviving what was tossed at me and other children that was basically tearing down our spirit and creating instead anger and frustration and low self-esteem, low self-worth. But our belief in God. I mean, how can you believe in a God that they taught if that God was going to punish you and throw you in hell anyway? Because I was told that I was a heathen and a sinner and I was going to go straight to hell at 4. Can you believe it? Yes. I think back on that and I shudder.
Yes.
Because I was spared those thoughts. And many of the children I went to school with were not, and they committed suicide. They became alcoholics, and they no longer walk this earth. Most of my friends back then are no longer here.
You know, Betty, it's not unlike the Catholic Church in a lot of ways, too, in terms of confession on Saturday. I had several friends growing up who lived under the Damocles sword, if you want to call it that, of the Catholic Church, you know, and the judgment and the fear that they would die before they were able to get last rite or get vindicated by a priest. Tam and I are huge when it comes to trying to be non-judgmental, because I think that religion has played a role in that judgment, in a God that is supposed to be merciful and loving and understanding and who sacrificed his own son for the world. How can we sit in judgment of others?
Well, and that's just it. That's the problem. The church used and all churches, from my understanding, because having been told first by the Catholic Church that if I were not a member, I would definitely go to hell. Then later in another boarding school where they told me the same, if I were not a member of their church, I would go to hell. So when I grew old enough to make my own decisions and
Yeah, you were damned either way, right?
I was damned one way or the other because I was Native American and Irish. And Irish were thought to be the sinners.
Right.
And the Native people were thought to be heathens. So I was damned. So I joined every church that I could think of, every church I came in contact with. I joined them. I wanted to be a member of every church so that when I went to heaven, maybe God would have mercy on me because I belonged to one or the other.
You are covering your bases, Betty.
I know. Right. I just thought that the church was going to save me. So at the age of 31, when I went into the hospital to have surgery and hemorrhaged and died, I couldn't have dreamed this up. You know, I mean, it was, the experience was so wonderful. And then later to learn that it's our personal relationship with God. It's our, and yes, there, God does exist. Many people who have fallen away from church, they fall away from believing in God because God is the head of all religion. They all speak of God, but many of the churches don't know what or who God is. And it's amazing. I mean, they think, they teach that you have to go through them to get to Him. And when I learned that you do not need to go through a church to get to God, going to church is good, and I recommend it because you're with people of like mind.
Right, for
and,
sure.
And it's good. Each church has its own way of practicing their belief in God. Some sing all the hallelujahs and they shout. They even march around in their church buildings and they worship Him in a very physical way. And
right.
then there are others that worship Him in a more mental way. And that's okay. I was just talking today about how if we all sat down to dinner and there wasn't a menu for each one of us and we all had to eat the same foods, how boring that would be for some and maybe distasteful to others. Whereas if we each had our own menu, we could pick what suited us best. Having all the different faiths to me then is a good thing. It's how you worship Him that makes you feel good that I think is right.
Well, and I think too, Betty, it's about the community with other people too. You know, the like-minded people that you come together and that spirit that is gathered there, right? I mean, it just fills you up and it gives you what you need to deal with a broken world.
Well, it is broken. It is a broken world and everyone has their trials and their tribulations and even those are good. See, everything on earth is good if you see it from, and everything is multifaceted, and it depends upon the facet that you're looking through, how you interpret your world. But if you step back and you think, okay, everything is multifaceted, let me look at it this from a different point of view, and then keep looking until you find the one that will help you through life. Stare through one facet alone, you can become very overwhelmed if it is a negative approach.
I love that, Betty. You mentioned before being age 31 and having to have surgery, dying and going to heaven. Talk about that experience for our listeners.
And remember, coming from my point of view as far as God is concerned, I mean, I was very frightened of Him. I didn't want to die. I was in agony the night before I went into surgery. I told my husband that I was fearful for my life. And not that, I mean, for dying, I had children at home. The youngest was 5, and there were 6 at the time, 6 of my beautiful children. I didn't want to leave them through death. Plus also, what waited for me beyond was terrifying.
The unknown.
I knew that the unknown and the belief that I would go to hell and burn forever. So I was tormented. Had the surgery, I bled out, I died, and I felt my body dying. I woke up in the hospital room, I could feel my body dying. It was basically, the cardiologist explained to me later that when you bleed out, you feel that weakness coming on, the nerves and everything, how they respond to that bleed out. I had felt all of that, and then I heard a pop. And the next thing I knew, my spirit, which I didn't know I had, came up from my body and rose up to the ceiling. And I flipped over to look down, and there was my body lying there. So I came down for a closer look at it. I had worked in the hospital previous to my death, and I know what dead people look like. And sure enough, I saw the body. And I just couldn't, you know, I just couldn't believe that I would live beyond death. I didn't know that there, again, was that real possibility. And I wanted to see my husband and my children. I was able to leave that hospital room and travel to my home, enter my home, and see my husband and my children there. But I felt and knew that the longer I was out of my body, knowledge would flow into me that I never dreamed possible, such as I knew my children would be fine without me, and I was able to go on without them and to experience what I needed to experience, and so I did. I returned back to the hospital room and then went down through this tunnel that took me to a very dark place. And before dying, I was claustrophobic and very fearful of darkness, because, of course, being thrown into hell or into outer darkness, that was my greatest fear. But in this dark space, I felt nothing but extreme love, and I basked in that love, and I could have stayed there forever if this white pinpoint of light didn't come and attract me and draw me into it. While following that pinpoint of light, it took me to the embrace of Jesus Christ. And people say, how can you dare say that you went into the arms of Jesus Christ? And I say, how could I dare not say, having experienced it, that I didn't come running into his arms? Which I'm using physical terms for how my spirit got there. I don't know. All I know is I got into his arms as quickly as I could. More exciting than that is that I recognized him. Now, how on earth would I recognize Jesus Christ? I never met him before. I didn't experience him in any life experience while on earth. He wasn't a part of my understanding, much less belief system, but there he was, and I knew who he was, and I knew I had been with him for eternities, as have we all been with him through eternities. He was like a brother, and yet again, like a father. I mean, the love was just immense, and I chastised him. Now, this is another thing about my personality. My father always said, say what you mean what you say, or keep your mouth shut. And I
sounds
grew
like
up
my
with
dad.
Yeah, they mean what they say, believe me.
Yeah.
And so there I was with him, Jesus Christ. I mean, of all people, I couldn't have even imagined it. And yet I was there angry at him at the same time. Not in the same anger that we have here on earth, but I just told him, I never want to leave you again. Ever, ever. I never will. And why did you send me to earth? Why am I down here? And he chuckled. I know that's a human expression for what I felt coming from him, but he has a sense of humor that is immense. And he just chuckles. And he said, I'll let you know. And then this is when my eyes were open, my spirit eyes, and I saw that I wasn't just sent to earth. I wanted to come to earth for the experience that I would have here on earth so that I could develop my spirit. And we all did. There's not one single soul here on this earth that didn't volunteer to come here. And we each have a purpose to fulfill. We can't even imagine what that purpose is, because it's spiritual. It is not physical. In other words, it's not developed and created by any of our walks or stations here on this earth. They showed me on the street a drunken bum laying there in all his waller. They said, what do you see, Betty? And I said, why, that's a drunken old bum. And they said, now we want to show you what his walk on this earth and what he is all about. And so they took his spirit out of his body for a minute so that I could see what his truer self looks like. And his spirit was brilliant. I mean, the light that came flowed from him, I don't even know, I can't even give you a wattage that the brilliance of him as a being, where he had developed as a spirit. Now, compared to my little light, I often tell people that I looked like 3 watts. Yeah, 3 watts of light. I paled in comparison. And they said his position on this earth was only for one purpose. He had bonded to another spirit before coming to earth. This man that came was going to be a man of notoriety and position. And he had promised that he would do a great work for a lot of people. He would help them. And his buddy, the drunken bum, he said, I'll come down and remind you. And that drunken bum laid on the street in all his drunkenness. And this man would pass by him. Their eyes would meet. And that would be the reminder to the prominent man that it's time for you to do your work.
Learn. Love. Listen. Live. True North Story. And now, back to the program.
Do you see me? Here I am.
up high in the sky above the world, above the world, above the world, above the world, above the world.
This is just amazing. I just want to tell you, Tam and I are reading a book by Stephen Pressfield called War of Art. He puts forth a theory that I hadn't really thought about as a creative, as a writer, and I want to get to your book, and this is why I'm bringing this up. He talks about that all of us are more like vessels, and that God instills a purpose into us. And for us to deny the creation of that purpose is not only to hurt ourselves, but to hurt society and to deny God's purpose for our own lives. And I never thought about that.
He must have read my book.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Well, apparently 20 million people have read your book because it's a, you know, international New York Times number one bestseller, Embraced by the Light. So tell us how you went from experiencing this unbelievable, incredibly life-changing vision and then turning it into a best-selling book.
Well, I was sent back from heaven, which is another long story, and I'm sure people reading the book will find that out. But coming back to Earth, I mean, who do you share this with, right? This was back in 1973. So our world just wasn't ready to hear it, for number one. People, friends, relatives, their eyes would glaze over when I tried to explain any part of it. My husband, all he could say is, I know you so well. I know you wouldn't make this up, but it's unbelievable. Now, he was raised in a fundamentalist church, a Southern Baptist church.
Yes.
Much of what
I know all about that.
Yeah, we both do.
I have a college degree from a Southern Baptist university, Mercer University in Macon, Georgia, so I know all about the Southern Baptist.
Oh, my gosh, the worst kind, huh? John, that is going to be hard for you to overcome.
Yeah, I know. I know. But on the good side, Betty, I also have a degree from Valparaiso University, which is a Lutheran university. So, you know, I'm all
over. Yeah, that balances a little
bit. Exactly.
Well, my husband was, you know, he wasn't terribly fond of the church in that as he grew up under the tutelage of his family and that belief system, he felt a lot of hypocrisy. Still, whatever you are raised up in, it becomes part of your foundation. So for me to tell him what I experienced, and that we pre-existed with God, and that we are going to return to Him, and we are going to continue our development in other worlds yet that He has created, that was just too much. That was too much. And he said, honey, don't tell too many people. He says, I don't want them to criticize you or hurt you in any way. And so I kept it to myself for the most part. But all this information in my mind that was just driving me. So I went to work as a volunteer in a cancer research center here in Seattle, and I volunteered to be with the patients as well as their families who were suffering along with their loved ones. And I was at the bedside of many, many, many of those who passed, and I felt at home with them, because as they were dying, they often would describe what I saw on the other side, or tell me that they're surrounded by their loved ones, and I would just I gloried in that. I fed off of that. While I was helping them, they were actually helping me, and it was wonderful. Then I began to talk a little bit more openly, and did a few talks at various churches and organizations, and finally met with Raymond Moody, who encouraged me to get out there more. But my greatest encouragement came to write the book when I was reminded one day that it was time for me to write the book and that I was sent back to do it. Now, I had never written anything in my life, maybe a little bit of poetry, but other than that, none. And nothing. And I was told that the right publisher would be sent to me, not to worry about it. The words would come just as the book was meant to flow. All of that fed into me. If you ever watched the movie Matrix, I remember the first time I watched it. And by the way, I did go see it 9 times. Matrix number one.
There is so much in that movie.
There is.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Holy cow.
So much. What I experienced and understood. Like the downloading. I was told that people here on Earth are downloaded. Everything is created in heaven before it's created here. I was told about the computers and how they would expand and come here, about the liquidness of the computer screen. All of that I knew back in 1973.
Hey, Betty, we wanted to give you the opportunity to tell the part about how you came back to Earth, because I think that's important too. I mean, we want people to obviously buy the book and read the book because, you know, it's just so powerful. But
I don't like Calvin at all, so don't worry about it.
Okay.
Talking about the experience brings me back to the experience, a homesickness that I feel because the people I left there, I loved. The people I will leave here eventually, I also love. And so it's like being away from home.
John and I have referred to going to heaven someday as going back home.
Exactly.
Is that what you felt?
Exactly what it's like. Well, you have more people there that, you know, that you have left for eternity.
Right.
Yeah. And so going back is, and they're your cheerleading section. They are cheering you on. They want you to fulfill your purpose no matter how great or small, because we measure things by greatness, smallness, good, bad, ugly. There's a spiritual heavenly experience that, you know, people have not come in touch with. It's not about what we describe as good or what we describe as famous. Like, there are no real famous anything in heaven.
Interesting.
God is no respecter of persons, you know, people, because we are all who we are. I mean, it's like we're all one. We're all equal in many ways.
That's amazing. Almost like I just heard a message by Louis Giglio at Passion City last week. This is amazing. He was describing in Revelations when he's talking about Christ sitting on the throne and what that looks like. And there's a description of that. And then he was building on the fact of being co-heirs in Christ. I just thought of when you said that about being co-heirs with Jesus in a way that is like, that's the universe, that's the eternal home that we will one day go back to, where we were probably before we came here.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Even God grows. He grows because we grow, and our lives are meaningful to him in that way. Tell that to some of these churches, they wouldn't appreciate that at all. All they need to do is broaden their mind. When everything evolves, everything grows, everything is eternal, wouldn't God be too?
Absolutely.
It just brings you closer to loving him, because it's like being a father of all. If you're a father of all and your children are good and they grow in spirit, doesn't that expand you? I tell you that as a mother,
as a parent,
of the
yes,
spirit.
You understand. Yes.
Yeah.
You said that you were reminded to write this book. What did that reminder look like?
I was reminded in a very awkward position. I was driving to work. At the time, I was a clinical hypnotherapist, and I was on my way to work to deal with some patients, some clients. I loved, after having had the experience, I came back with a love for, classical music. And so I had a CD in, and the music was playing, or cassette, beautiful music. And I had my one hand up, and I was just kind of directing the music with the hand and just into that glory of the beautiful music, when all of a sudden the music stopped, the voice came clear into my head, it's time to write the book. It was that shocking, that startling, it was that beautiful and fearful, because I'd never written a book before. And wasn't more than a week later, I was awakened from my sleep and going back to the Matrix, when the letters, words or whatever were coming down in the Matrix, that's came to me in a similar fashion. It wasn't coming down, it was going across, but word for word for word, at first very slow so that I could read it. But the more I read, my eyes were wide open, my husband said, because he woke up and he saw me laying on the bed with my eyes open, but I was seeing the words going across. And as I could comprehend it, the words would go faster and pretty soon so fast, it was like the speed of lightning. And that was embraced by the light being written out for me.
What year was that, Betty, that happened?
I believe that happened in 78 or 79. I wrote my first draft then, and then there was a period of rest, and then after that I was told to start writing it in greater detail. And so I started writing it just as it would come to me, and not for me not to worry. It was all going to come, and it did. And I would write it on a yellow, one of those long
legal
papers, the yellow ones. And I still have those papers.
Wow, how great is that?
I wrote them out. Yeah, I know. It's kind of cool. And so I just wrote it out on the yellow tablets. We didn't have a computer. Computers were not yet, you know.
Right.
Something that we could afford anyway. My husband was a system analyst. He actually worked for Boeing. He was a computer programmer. We did own a, can't remember the name of the machine now, but it was a...
A word processor?
And, yeah, yeah, a word processor.
Right.
So he went out and bought it so that I could do my book, but I didn't know how to type. So I would write out the yellow papers, and he would type them up for me.
Oh, how great is that?
And so that was the beginning of Embrace by Like the Book. And that was 1990, 1991, something like that, when we started doing that. The book was ready in 92 and came out. Publisher came to me.
Well, that was my next question, was what that process looked like, was getting the manuscript to actual on the page.
My husband, bless his heart, he kept saying, how are you going to get this published? And I said, well, they told me, God told me, allowed me to know that the publisher would come to me. I will know his voice. By the tone of his voice, I will know who he is. So I remember my husband going to work, and he was telling people that what he was doing. He says, my wife is writing a book. And they said, well, she can always self-publish it, because he said it was, he says, it's so meaningful to her. I want to help her get this published. And he says, well, do it through self-publishing.
Right.
So he went to the credit union and was trying to get a loan so that he could do that. I mean, he was in the process of being so wonderful to me. And
wow.
Then one day I received a phone call. I thought it was my publisher, but it wasn't. But the tones were so much alike that were in my head. And I signed up with him. And as it turned out, he wasn't the right one. But he ended up selling the rights to the right publishing company. And when that publisher called me, I knew that I had the right one.
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah, because the first words out of his mouth, and I had written this down years before, but I had forgotten. I got out my old notepads and would open them up, because whenever the spirit would talk to me at all, whenever I'd have that communication, I would take notes. And it said right there that when you hear his tones, you're gonna know him by the tones of his voice, and you will know him by the words of his mouth. And he will say, Betty, I have a passion for doing your work, your book. And sure enough, out of this man's mouth came, Betty, I have a passion for helping you with your book.
And who
he
was,
had to use the words passion.
Who was the publisher? Who was the man?
Well, the man, he was Curtis Taylor. He's the man who edited my book, a company called Gold Leaf Press. It was not yet created. He and his partners created a publishing house to publish my book.
Brilliant men they were, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. I wanted to ask, kind of in your own words, to tell us a little bit about what you think, you know, the purpose and meaning for today's world that they can take away from Embrace by the Light, because I know that's super important to you, and the messages and the purpose contained in there. We obviously want folks to go buy the book and obviously read it and engage with it, but What are your, briefly, your thoughts on that?
Well, Embrace by the Light is not just about death and overcoming the fear of death. It's about life, because once you read Embrace by Light, you want to live, number one. Number two, you know you have a purpose. You want to fulfill that. Now, you don't have to know what your purpose is. As long as you live and you follow your heart, you will be drawn into your fulfillment. And people have to understand, you can't measure it. You can't say, I want to grow up and become my purpose is going to be a doctor, lawyer, merchant chief type thing. It may or may not. And it doesn't matter, because that isn't the way that God measures success.
Interesting.
You could be, you live into the fulfillment by following your heart. Your heart will direct you. And the heart directs through passion. And like the publisher who called me, he says, I have a passion, because the heart is so driven by the emotion of passion, which passion is usually directed by love or a power that is equivalent to love. We follow that, and we will be led to what we are to become for God, for our purpose, because each one of us before coming to this earth anyway as spirit beings had already arrived at a certain level of spirit growth. And then we came here because we needed some part of that refined. Our time here on earth is, you know, we grow into wisdom through experience only, not through osmosis, although there is a certain amount of growth can be accomplished that way, but it's through experience, hardship, a lot of hardship. it'll bring you to fully understand and appreciate life and appreciate things. And so you don't live in sympathy of something, you live in empathy because you have that in you. You have experienced it, and whatever you experience is then incorporated into your essence. So that would be that vessel that we were talking about
earlier.
Right.
Uh-huh. So whatever is poured into that, and the wonder of that is, and it was shown to me that as a vessel, you come to Earth and you're empty from you know, because you have no earth experience, and then your parents pour in, your siblings pour in, your teachers pour in, your everyone who teaches you anything or you are impressed by, they pour in their belief systems, their feelings, they create what you feel about yourself, and you become an adult, and sometimes you don't feel good about yourself. You've been told that you can't do that. It's, you know, you're just not smart enough, you're just too this, you're too that. You bought into someone else's belief system. Now, as an adult, and this is what I did as a clinical hypnotherapist, is you take patient to their belief system and say, now, is that true? Really look at it. Is that true? Is that something that someone told you? Well, they took this one, said this one, that one. Okay, it's not true. Dump it out. And they visualize pouring that part out. It's not, it doesn't pertain to anything. It's not even worth your while holding on to it. Let go of it. And so they let go of it. And it's magical. It creates a change in the person's belief system, and that is awesome. So what Embrace by Light brings is it brings the understanding that at any point in your life you want to make change, get rid of it. Address it with your adult mind, with your new spiritual understanding, with your new goals. You know, it's yours. It's on you. Not on anyone else. You're an adult now. Change it. And it works. It really, truly does. There's another book that is wonderful. It's called Power Versus Force. It's a wonderful book because it reminds me that we have the power to change all those things that were forced upon us. And I don't know if the author titled it for that reason, but that's what I get out of it. Power Versus Force. And so Embrace by Light empowers one to see things at a higher level. A spiritual level, actually, and then live their life according to that. And it brings you closer to God in a more purposeful way. And he doesn't want just all your glory, all your worshiping, all the things that we normally think that we need to do. He's already glorified. Mm-hmm. Now he wants us to be glorified. We are co-creators. He wants to see our work through him, you know, and that is what it's all about. So Embrace is not about death. It's about life. Prepares us to go to the spirit world so that we can continue on from that point.
Betty, that is so powerful. So powerful.
It is a powerful little teeny book. It's only 147 pages.
Well, and it has resonated with so many people of all walks of life. And I know that you've recently had an opportunity to talk to a woman who she's quite famous, but she's also had her own personal trials like we all have. And that is Kim Kardashian. And she read your book and she reached out to you.
Well, she did after she experienced some trauma in Paris. Her father had actually given her Embrace by Light when she turned, I believe it was 17 years old. It was before his death. He died of cancer. Kim was very, very close to her father, and so she kept the book. When she had her experience in Paris a year ago, went back to reading Embrace by the Light, and she found comfort in it because she was quite traumatized. She had more than just trauma. She, during the experience of the robbery, she felt like this was almost predestined, an event that was meant to happen. So she had to talk to me. because I became her favorite author, she said, because number one, she loved her father so much and missed him. And it was a book that he had given her to read. And then also, it was the only thing that could bring her up out of her despair after the robbery. Helped her a lot. And so she wanted to call me just to talk and express her gratitude. So she did. She did call. We talked for about an hour. It was very helpful to her to talk to me because she needed to hear my sincerity. But even more than that, I think what was wonderful, you know, there's always, I believe in miracles. I believe in magical things. I believe in that there are really no coincidences. And she asked me what I thought about what I felt about her robbery. And out of my mouth popped, not predestined, but that it was a divine appointment. That's what I said. I said, Kim, I believe that it was a divine appointment. And she literally let out a scream.
Wow.
Because that was exactly what she felt that it was too, a divine appointment. Now, why would she have such a divine appointment? First off, Kim is a wonderful young lady. She is very sensitive, intuitive, very spiritual, I think. And life purposes, life experiences probably brought her to where she is today to fulfill a purpose. And maybe that purpose was, because I'm involved in it, so I'd like to think it is. Maybe that purpose was to create an immense fan base for these people to listen to Embrace by the Light.
Mm.
Because I'm telling you, I reach a certain range of people, people that are seeking God, people who are seeking spirituality, but I do not reach her youth, not like she does. They gravitate to her because they're all so misled in life. They're looking for self-esteem, so they're doing their beautifying, they're doing their body extensions and all the other things in order to reach that point of satisfaction when none of that is needed. But they don't think so. They go in that direction instead. They're looking for comfort. They're looking for self-worth. They're looking for some kind of recognition that they're not getting. They're looking for love.
Yes.
And they're not getting it. Her fans, for the most part, are not going to read Embrace by Light without her saying so.
Right.
And now look what's happening. It's amazing. Now, I have had people say, how do you dare associate with Kim Kardashian? I say, how do I dare not?
Hmm.
I mean, isn't she a child of God? Didn't she come here for a purpose?
This is True North Story, the original podcast series. Learn, love, listen, live. And now, back to the program.
But remember when I moved in you, and the holy dove was moving too, and every breath we drew is hallelujah, hallelujah.
Tam and I, it goes back to what we were talking about the non-judgmental thing. You know, it's, I am not, and I think Tam agrees, we are not in a position to make judgments. I mean, if it's clearly obvious, that's one thing. But I don't know any other person's heart. I don't know what their motivations are. I don't know, you know, I can look for signs or truth, but then to prognosticate about it is not my position. And I don't want it to be, because I have enough problems with my feet of clay, you know, trying to keep my own path straight. I don't want to be in, and I know Tama feels the same way. So for you, Betty, to be able to tap into millions and millions of young people who, to your point, are craving this material world that is so temporary and transient, to be quite honest, because we all know we get older. We all know looks fade. All the stuff that's important when you're 20 is really far less important when you're 40 or 60.
Exactly. And so this to me, it's God sent. It's nothing I created. It's nothing that I thought.
There's talks, I guess, about a movie too, right? Tama and I had heard about that, and that I think that at some point that we may be able to see Embrace by the Light on the big screen.
I certainly have been working in that direction for a long time. You can't work with greater people than Ridley Scott, I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I know.
What an amazing. That's certainly somebody who can make some things happen on the big screen.
So, well, that would be again, what we think, isn't it? But what holds it at bay is that many people think that Embraced by the Light is all religious. There's too much in Embraced by the Light where it glorifies Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
People want that held at bay. You can't, you can believe in God, but you can't believe in his son, Jesus.
It's interesting, so isn't it?
Yeah.
Because
God is universal. God is universal, right?
I've been approached by some pretty good sized producers, and they want to make Embraced by Light without Christ. And what I've told them is this: I would rather never have Embraced by Light brought to film if it cannot have the truth. And the truth is, I did meet Jesus Christ. I'll not sell out in order to have a film done any other way. One producer,
God bless you, Betty,
and said, "Yeah, I just couldn't. I mean, how true could Embraced by Light be?"
If it's not your truth.
There's no amount of money that'll ever take me there, or no circumstance that I pray to God will ever happen to me, even bring me to be tempted. Aww. But I won't. I'll go to my grave before then. And so, Embraced by Light, as beautiful of a story as it is, as many, and 20 million was 20 years ago, I think, that was the count. Lost count. So there are
more people than that.
Yeah. So here's a world of people waiting for Embraced by Light, and yet we're seeing all of these other movies coming out. And so I have to wonder.
You know why that is,
holding
Betty?
It back.
Because Jesus Christ isn't a comic book hero. That seems like that Hollywood is generating right now is like just comic book. God bless Stan Lee and all those guys that, you know, have written all these comic books. But at some point, it's fantasy. And,
right.
You know, so when you're talking about the truth, all of a sudden people get uncomfortable with that. I mean, we're seeing that with the news and the media. Absolutely.
Yes.
For sure. They are uncomfortable. And the universality of God is that it's applicable across a wide swath of religions.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Where you talk about Jesus Christ being the Son of God, then it gets a really, now you're dialing in and it's getting specific,
right.
And that uncomfort level goes
up
much higher.
Exactly. That is so true. So we'll wait and we'll see. And, you know, the thing is, God is not a loser. He's a winner. And I was told that Embraced by Light will be brought to film, and I know it's going to happen. And I'll tell you what, whoever is brave enough to come forward to help bring Embraced by Light to film, they're going to have a whole world waiting for Embrace. They'll have a there just can't be another movie greater than this, and perhaps the what was the greatest Christian movie? Was it the Ten Commandments? Or
right
with Charlton Heston?
Yeah. Embraces has that power to move forward, but distributors in Hollywood, you've got to have good distributors, as we have all found out.
Well, and Betty, think about Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. You know, I mean, here's a guy that was pretty well entrenched in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
and he had to go on his own pretty much and find, a distributor and split 50-50 with the distributor. Now, he made incredible amounts of money. Not that that's your goal, but I mean, but the message of the film, I thought, was a very powerful one. And a lot of people saw it and embraced with it. And I think the same can be true with your story and with Embraced by the Light.
Ridley Scott now and company now do have the right to help us bring it up. I'm co-partners with them. And the main reason for that is to keep the control of Embrace. There's no way I'll ever relinquish control of it, ever. So,
well, that's the only way you maintain the truth and the integrity in the story, for sure.
And I'll tell you what, I will do that forever. I will not bring the movie forward if it has to be bastardized in any way whatsoever. And I think I mentioned that one producer said that I should die riding a motorcycle bike instead of from having a hemorrhage. Now, how true?
Wow.
I know it's wild. And that's Hollywood for you. If one part of the movie is not true to the book, then how much more of the book is a lie?
Yeah,
you know, that's
it,
what
it,
I would
undermines,
think.
It undermines the integrity.
It undermines it all.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Kim Kardashian invited you to come down, and she wanted to share your book. And I understand that you had an opportunity to be with her and some friends as a part of her show.
I went there eager to meet her because after talking to her on the phone, she was like She reminded me of my youngest daughter, the sweetness in her voice, her tenderness because she had just been wounded. I just wanted to wrap her in my arms and just hold her because she was just so hurt by it all. And that is basically, you know, the energy that was felt between us in that I felt to nurture her.
Right.
And I didn't know who Kim Kardashian was. I think that's a point to make. I didn't know who she was. I'd never watched her shows.
You weren't
when
a
I
fan.
Told, I wasn't a fan. I didn't know anything about her except for that what I would read in the internet when it should come up in the news. But my grandkids did. So after I spoke with her on the phone, they filled me in on who, and they are they were fans of hers.
Oh, I bet they were.
Sure.
I bet they were. So, you became the coolest grandma in the world, like overnight. What?
Oh, I know. I was a shining star. They loved it. So meeting Kim, I was anxious to meet her, but because I felt this emotional attachment to her of loving her and again, just wanting to embrace her and to let her know that, you know, her world is fine, that she can let go of this bad experience. And so that's what I felt. And meeting her was just, I mean, it was just perfect. It was what I felt when I did have the opportunity to embrace her. It was just a very loving moment. And I think she felt the same way. You can feel what people are thinking about you when you look into their eyes. And
so
I could
true.
Feel that mutual love and respect.
And we all have that common human experience, no matter what path life tends to take for us. We are all human and have those needs and desire to connect.
Exactly. And we want that love.
Yes.
That love that is nothing. I mean, I have met many famous people in the world. So it wasn't, I wasn't, what do
star
you
struck.
Call it? Starstruck.
<You're right>.
Yeah.
For one, and for another, I can read people like a book, pretty much. And I could read into Kim and I could feel her and love her. I truly did. And I was so appreciative of her inviting me on. Just a little bit apprehensive in that I knew that I would be spending time with her that would be edited and brought to film. And I've had that done before, unfortunately, in some ways, and fortunately in others. And again, that's me looking at it through my human eyes and my using my human brain. Before I do anything, I pray about it. And I know that God has always taken the opportunity to tweak it enough to fit his purposes, not mine. So I know that no matter how that, you know, that is filmed or edited, I know that it will serve a higher purpose than I can even imagine because I'll never see it from his point of view. And so I'm comforted in knowing that it will be perfect.
John and I do not believe in coincidences.
And
our
we
conversation
not.
With you is not a coincidence. I believe it was a divine appointment.
Exactly.
And it's been such a delight to talk with you. As we close our time together, Betty, is there a message that you would like to leave with our listeners today?
I'd like to leave this message, and it's actually a two-parter. When I was ready to leave heaven, and I didn't want to come back, but they did show me my purpose, and I promised God I would do it, so I came back to fulfill that promise. And I said to Jesus, how on earth am I going to go back and tell people about this experience? And I said, when so many believe in the fire of the fires of hell and this, that, and the other. And he said, very simply, he said, if you as a good mother wouldn't throw any one of your children into fiery furnace or into outer darkness, how much greater is God's love than yours? Mm-hmm. And I was stunned. Such a simple phrase. And yet I thought into my mother's heart, I wouldn't toss any of them out. I would draw them closer and love them. And then the scripture came to me about the one lost sheep.
Right.
And I thought, wow. And the other thing that he told me, he says, going back to earth, he said, to teach above all else, love one another, and everything else will be fine. And of course, there are scriptures for that, too. So for people who love scripture, which I do love scripture, I was taught much of it. And that is to first love God, have your love for God. And second to that is to love one another. And that's what I like to leave people with, is love one another. Mm-hmm. And my own add-on to that would be, begin with yourself. Love yourself. You can only pour out to others what you have in yourself to pour out.
That's powerful. You have to start with yourself.
Exactly. And we're all going to return back to him. Everything that he has created, all things, including animals, everything he created first in spirit. And then it was placed on this earth for our education. And everything that he creates returns back to him. It all unfolds and comes back to its creator. And that begins the ripple effect in all of our lives. Everything that we put out there will ripple back to us. And so create good so that you can have that ripple back into your life, eternal life.
Betty Edie, it has just been an honor and a joy to speak with you.
Yes.
And do you have a website, Betty, if people want to engage with you and learn more about you and your podcast and your book?
Yes, and it's very simple as well. It's embracedbythelight.com.
Embracedbythelight.com. Betty Edie, thank you so much for being part of True North Story.
Thank you. And thank you both for having me on.
Thanks,
God,
Betty.
Bless you.
God bless you too.
Forget about the things you want.
Thank you for listening to True North Story, the series. Follow us on Twitter @True North Story and tune in next time for another True North Story. So